Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast, presents episode 588, The Untold Story of Halo, Beginnings, Branding, and Breakdowns, recorded live on July 13th, 2017. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I am your host, Duststorm.
And I'm your co-host, Godzilla T.
And after a plane cancellation and plane delay, I am finally back in Maryland, behind the microphone.
Yay, he finally made it back to the East Coast.
It took a while, but it certainly had its toll on not doing the podcast on Tuesday, but I'm back. So we're doing this one on Thursday this week. Because of that, but we'll get to that in a little bit. We are going to be embarking on a pretty significant undertaking for the next few weeks of this show. Some of you may remember the article that was posted on Vice, which was The Untold Story of Halo, an Oral History. And we are going to be doing a podcast for each part of the story that was published. So we're going to tackle part one tonight. And in subsequent shows, we will tackle parts two and three. We will have an interlude for Tuesday next week, as we will be having the folks from Project Contingency on the show next Tuesday with a special little announcement for their project as well. So you'll want to be tuned into that if you're interested in the Project Contingency effort, the community effort there. And then we also have a few little community tidbits and news things to discuss tonight as well. So let's go ahead and jump into some of those to start things off. Everyone probably knows from the announcements leading up to RTX this past week that we're getting a 4K update for Halo 5 for the Xbox One and backwards compatibility for Halo CE Anniversary, Halo 3, Halo 3 ODST, and Halo 4. All the Halo 360 titles. Unfortunately, well, I guess not necessarily unfortunately, because there's a definitive edition, but Halo Wars wasn't included on the 360 titles. But all the first-person shooter 360 titles are making a comeback.
Halo Wars is already on back compat.
Is it on back compat, or is it just definitive edition?
Yeah. No, it's already on back compat.
Never mind. So all the Halo 360 games are now back compat.
Yeah, I really did not think they were going to do that.
I didn't either.
So it's entirely possible we could see Halo CE and Halo 2 come out when they launched the original back compact setup. So we could have all the Halo games on one console.
The only downside is there's not going to be live for Halo 2. That will not be happening. Unless they manage to update the code somehow and get the Xbox Live functionality in the Halo 2 game to work like it does in the 360 titles.
Yeah, that's one thing. You know, with the total redesigned Xbox Live when they did the Xbox 360, that could prove to be a challenge.
Definitely. Yeah. Thinking of it too, Halo 2 had a custom Xbox Live integration, kind of, compared to the rest of Xbox Live for 360 titles. So, regardless, though, you'll be able to do LAN.
It was an early, that way. You know, an early Xbox Live game. You know, a lot of the things we take advantage of nowadays didn't exist when Halo 2 launched. Like, you know, a friends list.
Well, and in a way, Halo 2 kind of started those features and functionality in Xbox Live. So there's a lot of things to attribute to Halo when it comes to the success of, I guess, the feature set of Xbox Live as it is today.
But I'm glad to see those four titles at least coming to Xbox One.
And quick shout out to Kane75, who just subbed to us on Twitch through Twitch Prime. So thanks for the sub. And we also have Pins, who has subbed for 22 months in a row now. Coming up on 2 years here pretty soon. So thank you guys for the sub. We also have the map packs for all the those titles being free once those titles hit backcompat. So they're not free now. The map packs will be all inclusive for every single title. So Halo 3, ODST, I don't think had a map pack, but the Halo 3 multiplayer disc will work on all those maps, will be free for download if you don't even have the multiplayer disc. You also have Halo 4's DLC, and I don't know if I heard this from somewhere, or maybe someone else can look at where it's maybe sourced from, but I think also the Reach DLC is going to be made free for compatibility with the multiplayer from CE Anniversary. I'm not 100% sure on that, but I think that
I wonder how they're going to handle that with Halo CE Anniversary, seeing it just basically keyed you into the Reach multiplayer.
Well, and Reach is back compat already, so maybe they'll just make all the Reach DLC
free. Is it just
going to
switch games? And
it could. It might be smart enough to do that.
Because if you had your Halo CE disc in, you could play the anniversary maps, but that's all you could play. You couldn't access all of the Reach matchmaking. But if you had the Reach disc in, you could play Reach. And you could play the anniversary maps. You play all the maps. You just couldn't play the anniversary campaign.
It would be nice if they added the Reach maps to also be free for everything as well.
I'm sure they will. You know, they said all the DLCs would be free. So that's a DLC, and so it should be a free download.
Hopefully. And another quick shout out to the Running Riot, or Keet, for subbing to us as well. So thanks for dusting off the podcasting computer and subbing to us. miss you being out there in the podcasting space, but thanks for coming over and watching tonight. So that was the big Xbox One update for RTX. So the back compat and then the 5K update for Halo 5, which I'm kind of curious, is that something that they're just going to take the PC textures and apply? Because the PC supports 4K already through Halo 5 Forge. So are they just like reapplying assets to the game, and it's going to be a bigger install now on Xbox, I guess?
Yeah, it probably will be one of those updates that's only available if you own a Scorpio. I don't think if you have a regular Xbox One that it... Well, I guess it's possible, but I just don't see a reason to push it to the regular Xbox Ones, but they could push it out to everything.
I thought I heard somewhere, though, that the Xbox Ones are still going to receive 4K content update, even though they're not going to be 4K compatible, because it's all part of the same software package. Or at least there are some games that were like that.
They may not be able to distinguish that, you know, between, you know, if you're what console you're playing it on.
Because I thought there was some upset over hard drive space already on the Xbox consoles, and if you have to download 4K content to an Xbox One that has very little hard drive space, then you're going to be limited to 5 games per console.
Well, was it earlier this week Major Nelson tweeted out a 2 terabyte Xbox drive?
I think that's just the Seagate one that's been around since the launch, right?
Yeah, it's got a different shell on it now. They've got another shell. I didn't see what it actually was. If it was keyed to a game or not. But yeah, it's beginning to look like I'm going to have to invest in an external drive.
Yeah, there's some 2K drives, or 2K, 2 terabyte drives that you can get for under $100 at least. But that's still an investment.
Yeah,
that kind of sucks.
It's not that bad. Well, you know, I look at it this way. Back in 360 days, to jump from the 20 gigabyte hard drive to what, the 120,
they had a 60.
That was about $100 bill.
Yeah, that's true.
Like my Halo 3 console, it came with a 20 gigabyte hard drive.
True.
By the time I got all the Halos, well, when they actually started letting you install the game, by the time I got the Halos installed, I was running out of disk space. And this was shortly after Reach came out. I didn't have enough space to hold. I had to actually move the map packs for Halo 3 onto one of the saved sticks. And I had to do that with all my saved content for Halo 3, all my maps, all the custom game types and maps and all that stuff. And I had to keep the Halo Reach stuff there as well, just because I didn't have enough space.
I think another part to it too, though, is you weren't expected to install games to your hard drive at launch.
Right.
There was always an issue with space when it came down to, like, if you had a bunch of DLC, then yeah, you probably need to upgrade your hard drive. But we're in the era now where on Xbox, you have to install a game to your hard drive in order to play it. And for people that routinely play a bunch of games, you're losing time just because you want to play another game. Versus 360, you could just pop in the game and then you could go without having to install it. You wouldn't need the extra storage.
I'm not arguing that they need to be putting bigger drives in them, but it still doesn't get around the problem that it doesn't really matter how big of a drive you put in one. There's going to be somebody out there that's going to fill it. And the nice thing, one benefit to that is the people that are going to fill an external drive will be the ones spending the money on the external drive. So that cost is not passed on to everybody. That cost is not passed on to the guy that, he just plays little independent titles, or, he only plays one or two games at a time.
That's a good point.
Yeah, a lot of people complain that they didn't come with big drives. Okay, well, that's fine. I mean, I get your complaint, and I do agree with it, but they have to hit a price point with these consoles. And putting a 6-terabyte drive, a $300 drive, in something you're selling for $500 just really doesn't work.
That's a good point.
I mean, granted, they wouldn't pay $300 for a drive. They'd get better pricing than that, but even still.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But I like the fact that they did use the USB 3 bus so that you can get a high-speed drive to where your games are still playable over a USB connection. It probably would have been better if they'd let's see. Yeah. I don't know. USB-C really hadn't taken off yet. Thunderbolt was coming around, but then you're dealing with proprietary connectors. Yeah.
That was mostly Apple, I think, right? But yeah, it was one of those things that I think there's a lot of... I see where you're coming from, where you don't want to pass that cost on to everybody. But at the same time, we're getting to the realm of if we're going to be requiring players to download 4K content to a console that's not native 4K, then there is kind of the issue there of, well, okay, you're still taking up and only being able to install 5 or 6 games at a time to a console.
I just really don't think that the full 4K content's going to be coming to Xbox One. Don't get me wrong, I'm sure there'll be some setting tweaks and things like that, and it'll probably be a 5 or 6 gig update, another 5 or 6 gig update, but I'm with you, Dust. If you're not going to be playing 4K content, you shouldn't have to download the update for the 4K content.
So I remember where I heard it now.
It's nothing that's going to benefit you.
Right. It was E3 when they were talking about Forza. And they were saying that you would have to download the 4K update for the new Forza game, even to the Xbox One and not the X. That's when people were starting to get a little uneasy.
Yeah, hopefully Microsoft is listening and they'll figure out a way to make that not happen.
That would be nice. I'm sure a lot of people would appreciate that, especially people who have data caps on their internet.
Yeah, that's one thing we do lose sight of. Here in the United States, there are very few services that have a cap on internet usage. They basically break it up by bandwidth, how fast your connection is. But the other companies, you're only allowed so much a month, and then they charge you out the wazoo if you go over it.
Pins makes a funny little note here in the chat. He says you're expecting to Microsoft to know how to handle patches.
Yeah. I know it's an oxymoron.
So we'll see what happens with Halo. Maybe they'll be smart about it and not push the 4K content to the Xbox One owners, and maybe they'll just keep it to the Xbox One X's.
I would hope they would do that because, you know, on my current Xbox, there is no reason for me to download a 4 gig up, or, you know, a 4K update, because the system will never utilize that information.
Right. So there's that. We rambled on for that for a while. Some other stuff in the Summer Celebration update that they posted. DreamHack Atlanta is taking place next weekend. So the same weekend as Comic-Con, which I will be attending. That DreamHack Atlanta is more like an MLG event where it's a lot of different games being played at the same time. And I think the prize pool for this one, I think it's either 50,000 or 75,000. So the final for the summer is taking place at DreamHack Atlanta. I haven't been following the summer season that much to know what the current standings are, but for those that are, have fun. Our friend Justin over from the Drunken Halo podcast is going to be over there next weekend. So if you are attending, chat or go find him and say hi to him. I'm sure he would appreciate it. And then the only other thing that really stuck out, since everything else was already kind of discussed as far as the new loot crate, the Rise of Atriox comics, and Halo Retribution, are the new lineup of the Halo action figures from Mattel. So everything is mostly inspired from Halo Wars 2, some stuff from Halo 5. So you have Spartan Douglas, Atriox, from Halo Wars 2, and then from Halo 5, you have Fel Vadam, you have Spartan Buck, you have an Imperial Grunt, and then you have Vale and Master Chief. So those are launching this summer, and they're the Series 2 of the Mattel figures. So that's it for the update. A couple other things from RTX, since I was there this past weekend. They had Halo 3 and Halo 3 ODST playable back compat on the show floor. So I got to play a little bit of Griffball on Sunday on Halo 3, and that was a lot of fun. The Griffballers just kept getting back in line over and over and over again. I think they probably played at least 12 to 15 times that day on those stations.
I can't imagine that.
I don't know, right? The the Halo 3 ODST back compat was...
So how's the emulator holding up so far?
Pretty good, actually.
I mean, I know when they launched Reach, it was really, really low frame rate.
It was actually doing pretty well as far as the frame rate and being able to keep up with it. The only thing, and I need to go back and play on 360 to do a direct comparison, but because of, I think, the upscaling for the back compat, the pixelation of the assets in the game, I think, would be less, I don't know if this is the right word to use, but I'm going to use it, less offensive or less obvious if you're just playing it on 360, trying to run native 720 instead of up-resing it. To me, I think I would still try to play that on 360, and since there's probably going to be a lot of influx of people playing Halo 3 and ODST, I'll probably be picking those up every once in a while. But I would probably still stick to 360 on those, because you can play with 360 players, just like you can for Halo Reach on back compat. You can still do LAN from an Xbox One to an Xbox 360. You can do the matchmaking same way, co-op, campaign, firefight. It's all interoperable between 360 and Xbox One as far as the 360 titles go. So I'd still probably stick to my Xbox 360, because I have my Xbox 4 360 and my Halo 5 Xbox One right next to each other. And they're plugged into the same HDMI switch, so I'll just use that. There was not any noticeable lag, though, for Halo 3 or ODST. And it played just fine. It would be interesting to see, because, I mean, Griffball and just the normal Slayer isn't that heavy on resources, so it'd be interesting to take something like Trash Compactor or some other game type that has a lot of objects flying and see how the emulator runs under that. And there wasn't anything to really emulate that kind of load on the emulator. But for your standard stuff, it was working fine.
Well, I mean, on Reach, it would lag on the menu screen.
It did? I never experienced those issues, even at the launch of the Backcompat.
I went and played, just wanted to play with some campaign just to see how it worked. And the menu screen was lagging.
Wow.
I mean, it wasn't, a couple of days later, it was fine, but, it's just, I probably will do the same thing. I probably will just keep those games on 360 just to save the disk space. I'll see how big they are and, because I have to start thinking for the next Halo game and I'm running out of space here.
Yeah.
And then, there's some other Xbox One titles that I want to pick up and, I need to think about those too. So I probably will just leave my Backcompat games on 360. Because again, I've got an HDMI switch and I've got it set up to where, one button press and then I can play my 360. Biggest thing is getting used to a 360 controller again.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, I've kind of gotten used to my Xbox One.
Oh, yeah, and the thumbsticks are a little smoother on the Xbox One controller than they are on the 360.
Uh-huh.
I don't know, if I do the side-by-side comparison...
they're a little lighter pressure.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say the thumbsticks on the Xbox One are just lighter. They don't require as much effort to move them. And I can't use my Elite controller.
With the custom mapping...
Although I don't know that the custom mapping works on the 360 games or not. It should.
It should because that custom mapping is controlled on the controller level, the hardware level.
Yeah, it would work.
Yeah.
And something else I have to do is go in and create custom profiles for each Halo game so that the controls are relatively similar.
Yeah, especially because in Halo 3... you have the whole right bumper mess of having to swap and interact with stuff. So assign that sucker to a paddle or something. Or custom map.
Well, what's interesting is dual wielding.
Yeah, that's true.
I pretty much just don't bother.
The only things I think I would regularly dual wield would be needlers.
Only in Halo 2.
Halo 3, they were pretty rapid.
Halo 3... meh.
Halo 3, they were fun. Team Bubble Bath. Ooh, we'll have to do that. We'll have to try to get some Team Bubble Bath action going.
Oh, that's going to crash some people's hardware.
That will be the true stress test to see how Team Bubble Bath works on 360 versus the Xbox One emulation.
Oh, that's...
yep. Ooh. It's happening. We're going to do it. Now I get to introduce my girlfriend to Team Bubble
Bath.
We may
have to stream opposing points of view.
Yeah, we could.
One of us on Xbox One, one of us on 360.
Let's do it. Let's see, what else was at RTX? Aside from the stuff that was playable on the show floor, they had the Halo Carnival Shootout that had the Boomco weapons there. You could get one of three items based on how well your shot was. And they actually had the limits really low on Friday and then they bumped them up really high the following 2 days. But you could get a little ODST and Virgil patch. You could also get a Master Chief stress ball. And then there was also a Sergeant Johnson cap. And if they were within the arm reach, I would get them, but they're not at the moment. So those are the three items that you could get. And then there was also rec packs everywhere for you to pick up. So we actually have 40 rec packs that we picked up from RTX. And I might as well announce it here, but I'm going to give it away to people that are commenting on our YouTube videos that we uploaded from RTX. I recorded 5 different gameplays of Terminus Firefight, one of each leader, and then one of a randomly selected leader. And thankfully, I won every single game. A couple of them were really close, so you have to go watch and figure out which ones those are, but that's how we're going to give out those codes, is everyone who comments on the videos will be up to receiving one of those codes. If you haven't watched the videos, go watch them, and then go comment on them.
Let's see, podtacular.com/YouTube.
You're right. That'll take you there.
No, I'm going there. Podtacular.com. Ah. Great video!
Thank you. So there's the 5 videos to go watch. And thank you again to 343 for graciously allowing me to capture that footage after the E3 footage was recorded audio-less. So that was nice of them to let me do that there. They also had loot crates purchasable. So the loot crate that had the Master Chief one in it, the Arbiter one, and the original Red versus Blue figures were all purchasable at RTX. I forget which themes those were specifically. Everyone in the chat could probably figure out what those are. No pins. We do not have a MySpace for Podtacular. But there is a giveaway that we'll be doing here pretty soon for a full icon set. You could buy full icon sets at RTX. And we got 2 of them. So we'll be giving one away here soon. Not sure what we're doing with the other one yet. But if you did not subscribe to the loot crates and you were kind of regretting it and now you are interested in the full ring of Halo Icons figures, then we may have you covered. Not sure how we're going to give it away yet, but stay tuned and we'll definitely let everyone know how we're going to be doing that over social media. And thank you, Toast. It was the initiation crate, the very first one, Halo Conflict, and the Great Schism. So all of those figures will be given away them as a set, as a full set of 6. So if you're interested, then stay tuned to our social media and we will let you know how to get those. On Saturday, there was also the Halo panel. There was the Halo match game and they had Brittany Burns, Tom French, Frank O'Connor, Joe Staten, one of the ODSTs from the 405th, and then they would invite 2 guests from the audience for every round. Sketch and Grimbrother 1 came up with phrases with blanks for the guest players to fill in, and if they matched any one of the other panelists' answers, then they would get a point. And they alternate back and forth, and whoever got the most points got a prize. And there were some pretty nice prizes that they gave away. They also had a minigame presence on the main stage, like they do every time that they're there. So they have an hour time slot on the Rooster Teeth main stage for RTX. And they did Crossy Road, they did Griffball, and a couple of other minigames up on the stream. So that was a lot of fun to watch. Was that it? I think that was pretty much it. That was everything that happened at RTX this past weekend that was Halo related.
Sounds like it was a lot of fun.
It was. And it was my girlfriend's first convention, so I got to introduce her to all of the peoples there. And they loved her, and she loved everyone else, so that was good. There were a few jokes in there of people telling her to keep me in line, so that was kind of the customary greeting for some people. But there was a lot of good fun things to do. She had a great time. She bought some shirts. And I bought some Halo stuff and obviously the icon set and a couple other shirts and whatnot. And overall, it was a pretty good time until trying to fly home. So some of you may have heard of the flight stories from me via Twitter or Facebook. So we were supposed to be flying back on Monday, and then the FAA building, the Federal Aviation Administration building that controls the entire Eastern Corridor of flights, had a fire and they had to evacuate. So my flight back was canceled on Monday. So I had to get a hotel for the night, which was fine. We got vouchers from Southwest for the inconvenience. So that was nice. And then on Tuesday, we had our flight bounce around to three different cities. So it was a flight that did not have a change, no change in flight. So we just stay on the same plane. It was multiple destinations. So it was Austin to Chicago to Raleigh-Durham, then to Baltimore. It was already delayed coming in to Austin from wherever it was coming from. So we were supposed to leave at 2:15 and we didn't leave until 2:30. And some people may have heard of the national news headline of a fight breaking out in the plane. That was our plane.
Oh, nice.
So if anyone heard about that on the news, that was our plane. And me and my girlfriend were actually sitting right behind the police officer that was in the front. So if anyone has seen that picture, then we almost made headline news. So we had that fight broke out about 40 minutes into the flight. So they turned the plane around, had to land in Austin. They got escorted off. Southwest obviously had to fill out paperwork because of the incident and whatever. And then we had to refuel. And the first refueling truck had issues, so they had to bring in another refueling truck. So what flight was supposed to leave at 2:15 ended up leaving at 6:30. To add to that, having the bounce between Chicago, then Raleigh, then Baltimore, we left from my girlfriend's parents' house. So her dad took us to the airport and her dad was going to pick us up. So he went to bed early to wake up to pick us up from the airport because we didn't get back until 1:15 in the morning. And then it was so late and he wasn't used to the route that he drove in the wrong direction for about 10 minutes or so before realizing that he wasn't going the right way. That added a little more time. So I finally got home at 2:30 in the morning and I had to go to work the next morning. So my whole week was great up until Monday.
Yeah, that's a pretty screwed up.
That's my little RTX story. Just a little bit. Everything up leading up to that though was awesome. We had a great time with my mom and my brothers. We had the opportunity to have lunch with one of my brothers, and then my other brother was there for the 4th of July as we grilled and made kind of a large dinner with the family. And then we went to Schlitterbahn on Thursday before driving up to Austin, and then the whole weekend was great. And obviously, being the first time convention goer, her biggest issue was all the walking and standing, which is kind of one of those things you don't exactly anticipate when going to a convention for the first time. But at least that was the only thing that she had an issue with and not anything else.
It definitely wore on me. I mean, you know, I'd been to not really conventions, but they're car shows, which same principle. Except all the booths are cars. So you spend a lot of time standing and walking, and you know, our main convention center was I'm going to say triple the size of what RTX is, or at least it was the year that I went. So yeah, it's a long ways from one end to the other.
That sounds pretty big. Whoa, I heard that one.
Yeah, I felt it.
For those who don't know, GT is in the middle of a giant thunderstorm right now.
Yes, there is thunder and lightning.
Some people have been commenting in the chat and made some comments on Twitter that they didn't see Griffball Hub there this year, and there's a reason why. So, similar to how we did a 10-year anniversary thing at RTX a couple years ago for us, Griffball is planning a big 10-year anniversary type of thing for their RTX presence next year. So they took this year off to have some big plans for the next year. And I can't exactly share some of the stuff that they're planning at the moment, but needless to say, they have some big plans in the works for what they want to do next year and partners that they want to have involved with certain aspects of their experience. And I think it's something, if you're a big Griffball fan, big Halo fan, any kind of fan in that area, you might not want to miss RTX next year. They're hoping to go out pretty big, and some of the stuff that they have planned already, from what they've told me, is pretty exciting. So if you're a Rooster Teeth fan and a Griffball fan and a Halo fan, RTX will be a place to be next year. And hopefully we'll have something Halo 6 related to it that's announced next year.
Hopefully.
Fingers crossed. Yeah. So that's what the story is with Griffball Hub as far as Griffball presence this year. There was Griffball playable through the back and path for Halo 3, and they had Halo 3 all Griffball pretty much all day on Sunday, and then they also played it during the mini games thing on Saturday. So there was Griffball there in a sense. Not how it's been in the past. A couple other community related things. The next loot crate is available for pre-order now up until August 15th. There is a brand new Halo Icons figure set, the Series 2, that is going to be included in the next series of crates. And they have different bases. I don't know if they're going to go with a ring structure, if they're doing something else. I think the Cortana one, which they actually showed off this past week, has a square base. So I think the connections are going to be a little bit different this time around. But the crate theme is around Halo 4. It's called The Awakening. And you can actually get that right now for those listening. I don't know if I'll have this podcast up before then, but there are RTX discount codes, which will actually get you 12% off any subscription that you get. It is RTX 2017. It's good until July 16th. And if you head on over to podtacular.com/lootcrate, it will take you to the Halo crate where you can order it and then apply the RTX 2017 code. Again, that will work up until July 16th. And then after that, you can use the code PodTackler to get $3 off your crate. So go check that out. They also announced, not part of RTX, but they announced this either on Monday or Sunday, I can't remember, but there is going to be a Halo coloring book coming out in October. So for everyone that is into coloring, you will have an official Halo book that you can color with. So get your pencils, crayons, pens, whatever ready to color. I already pre-ordered one. My girlfriend colors coloring books, and actually one of my coworkers has a sheet on her desk for whenever she has meetings, people can actually color on the sheets. So it might be something worth looking into. You can find that over at podtacular.com/coloringbook. That will take you directly to the coloring book instead of having to do a search on Amazon. So you can head on over there and find the book there. Also from RTX, I forgot to mention this a little bit earlier, but there is a blue assault rifle going to be coming out from Boomco. So right now, the red one is the only one available. And the AR is the only automatic weapon, I believe, out of all the Halo Boomco weapons. Or dart guns, I guess. They are going to be coming out with another... I don't know if I should say this. I don't know if... I'll say this for later. But there is another weapon coming out from Boomco. And they may tease it at San Diego. I'll have to ask them if I can say what it is. But there is another weapon coming from Boomco that's going to be Halo related. That's not the blue AR. Also, the voice of the librarian, Tori Trittle, passed away this past week. She suffered the battle from lung cancer and passed away, unfortunately. So, sorry to hear. I guess kind of, well, from a Halo 4 perspective, pretty impactful from a storyline perspective, lose someone from the Halo family, but our condolences to her family and everyone around her. Sorry to see Halo talent go in such a way, but yeah, so that happened. And then last thing before we dive into this article, like I said before, we are going to be having the folks from Project Contingency on next week's show. They will be talking about their project as a whole, what their goals are for the project, and they have a special announcement that they're going to be making on the show. So it is a show you will want to tune in for live. Specifically, there is some visual features that will be of interest to those that are interested in the project. So definitely check us out next week. We'll have some fun stuff to show off, and we're looking forward to it. On to the big thing here, the nice big article. So for those that want to follow along, maybe they have read the article already and just need a quick refresher, I'll go ahead and post the link in the chat to what we're going to be talking about. We're only talking about part one today of this Halo history, dating all the way back to the very beginning stages of Halo. It's a three-part article, and we'll get to the other parts in future episodes. So everyone grab your tablets or your computers or whatever and follow along. First things first, though, we have a whole bunch of people that are included in this retrospective of Halo. So I'm going to list out all the ones that we are probably familiar with, and I'll read the descriptions of some that we may not be as familiar with. So Jamie Griesmer, a lot of people are probably familiar with him already. Marty O'Donnell, Marcus Lato, Joe Staten, Max Oberman, Dan Ayoub, Kiki Wolfkill, Frank O'Connor, Josh Holmes, Tim Longo are probably all the people that you recognize. A few other ones that you may not recognize: Alex Seropian, he is one of the original founders of Bungie, partnering with Jason Jones, who is actually not part of this recount of the Halo history. There is also Paul Bertone. He worked in the studio, started with Myth 2, and then held lead design positions for Halo 2 and Halo 3. And he led the ODST development as the director, working on the Firefight systems. There's also Peter Tate, who was a former Apple employee, and he was Bungie's executive vice president during the early Halo days. And he was one of the people that actually convinced Steve Jobs to show Halo at Macworld in 1999. There's Ed Fries, who was the former head of the Microsoft Game Studios. He was actually in charge of overseeing the early developments of the Xbox system. There's Stuart Mulder, who was then the general manager for Microsoft Game Studios, who played a part in the acquisition of Bungie and other in-house developers for Microsoft Studios. And then the other one, which you would have actually seen him in some Waypoint videos, but you may not recognize him right off the bat, but Ryan Payton. He was brought on to 343 after leaving Kojima Productions in 2008. He was the creative director for Halo 4. But he was later replaced by Josh Holmes. Those are all the people. Some of the people we're going to see in this first part, some of them not. Most of the Bungie people and the Microsoft Studios people is people that we'll see in the early stages of this, in this part one. For those asking in the chat, the RTX code for the loot crate is RTX 2017, all one word. Case does not matter. And for those after the fact, again, the code expires July 16th. So I don't know if we'll have the podcast out before then. We might have it out on the 15th, which will be Saturday. So I should have it out before then. So by the time you're listening to this, you either have a day or no days at all to use the RTX code. So sorry about that. We did tweet it out, to be fair. So I've been doing a lot of talking, GT. How about you start us off with some stuff that kind of stuck out to you? I think we all know kind of the fact that Halo started off as an Apple title, but what was some early stuff that really stuck out to you that you weren't aware of through this article?
Well, actually, it has to do with Apple. Apparently, during the development of Halo CE, let's see, what was his name?
Marcus, yeah, Jamie.
Which one came from Apple? Sorry.
Oh, that was
Peter.
Yeah, Peter Tamed.
Yeah. He, you know, after Microsoft had acquired Bungie, Steve Jobs was a little upset.
Yeah.
Well, more than a little. He was a lot upset. And Peter makes a statement that he will make sure he gets a shot at the IP for, you know, rolling it so it can release on Mac. And I'm like, everything that I've ever heard was when Microsoft bought Bungie, they bought it to be an Xbox exclusive title. They never intended it to be on multiple platforms. So that kind of actually got me, that caught me by surprise. There's so many little personal stories in here about, you know, just the drive that these people put into making Halo and Halo 2, because that's primarily what this first part covers. You know, the little sacrifices that they made. I mean, you know, there's some people that they really lost, you know, long-term relationships over these games. So I'm really glad that they put the effort into them. But I am sorry that their personal lives suffered for it.
And not just for Halo 1, but for Halo 2 as well.
Yeah, especially Halo 2. I did not know that Halo 2 went through such a major rewrite, you know, 2/3 of the way through production. You know, they had this whole story laid out and everything up to the E3 trailer. And basically after the E3 trailer, they figured out they couldn't do what they were going to do. And they basically scrapped everything and started over.
At least with the campaign.
Yeah, with the campaign. The multiplayer, Max Holberman had been working on it. And I have to admit, him and his team did an awesome job on the Halo 2 multiplayer. I still suck at it, but it was still fun.
And not just the multiplayer, even though we didn't have the CE
Piddle. You know, he is developing the, what do they call it? The virtual couch.
Yeah, the Halo party system. The party mode.
Yeah. He's responsible for helping Xbox Live continue. If it wasn't for Halo 2 and some of the other games, I don't think Xbox Live would have survived.
Yeah, probably not.
That's one of those things. I think that Halo 2 really contributed to the Xbox, other than being its, you know, an exclusive title, is that, you know, I think that really bolstered the idea of the subscription service for Xbox Live. Because at the time, PlayStation had, they brought in a network, but it was free. So you've got one side giving, you know, their customers a service for free. Granted, it was a lot more buggy and it was down as much as it was up, competing with, you know, this pay for service. And it wasn't cheap. Let's see. I think when it launched, it was still $50 a year when it first launched. Mm-hmm. And honestly, it hadn't gone up that much in the time that they've had it out. I mean, if you buy it straight from Microsoft, you'll pay about $60 for a year. That's not bad for the length of time Xbox Live's been around.
And every year you can find deals to get Live for $30 a year.
Oh, yeah. If you shop around, you can find discounted Live codes all over the place. But just, you know, the amount of care and amount of attention that Max and his team put into that multiplayer, and how severely understaffed they were for the majority of the development of the multiplayer. And when I'm saying, you know, they, you know, when it was coming to, you know, crunch time for the campaign, they were basically laying out the campaign levels on whiteboards.
Yeah.
And taking a picture of it.
Yeah. Literally whiteboards.
You know, they would literally lay out the, you know, a top down view of the play area. And say, okay, well, we want combat here. We want combat here. We want to put the weapons, you know, the weapons caches here. And they would lay out the basic premise of a, you know, of a level on a whiteboard, and then take a picture of it, and then go from there and actually design it. You're going back to Halo 1. You know, the fact that, you know, Bungie was so close to just disappearing.
They really were.
You know, if Microsoft hadn't picked them up, Bungie would not be here.
And the interesting part about that specifically is So in here, from the Microsoft person, from Ed Fries, he said that out of the blue, he got a call from Peter Tamped, who was at Bungie. He said they were going broke, and they were looking for someone to acquire them. So it's kind of interesting that they first called, I think, well, was Peter Microsoft or was Peter Bungie? Let me go back up here and look.
Peter was Bungie.
Yeah, he was Bungie's executive vice president, and he was a former Apple employee. So Bungie reached out to Microsoft saying, hey, we're going broke. We need someone to acquire us. And Ed Fries was looking, since he was head of Microsoft Game Studios at the time, he was looking for something to build the portfolio for the Xbox One. It's just kind of interesting to see that it was Bungie that reached out to Microsoft. And I think most people, I don't know if some people, if that's the common thing or whatnot, that's where the whole swing of being an Apple product over to a Microsoft product actually began. Whoa, that's a blast from the past. We have quality beverage in the stream. Wow. Welcome to the stream. It is an honor and a pleasure.
We do
to have
like
you.
Halo.
Yes, we do a lot. Thank you for dropping by.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and with the purchase of Bungie, it wasn't a straightforward thing because Bungie had still already had, they had contracts with one other publisher. I'm trying to find out who that was. You remember who it was?
It was Take-Two.
Take-Two, yeah. So basically, Microsoft had to work a deal out with them where Take-Two would retain ownership of everything that came before Halo 2. The Myth series, the Oni, all those previous games, that would be their IP. The only thing that Microsoft got was Halo and the employees.
Well, and some of the employees were actually split between different Bungie campuses working on different games.
Right. And that's something else I didn't know. I didn't know they had a second location. And I also didn't realize they were working on two other games while they were developing Halo. And I don't mean just Halo's in the concept phase. They're actually writing code for Halo, and they're still working on two other games. I don't know if either one of them ever made it to market.
They didn't end up making it.
Yeah. One of them was Monster Hunter.
And the other Monster one, Hunter was, I thought, the code name for one of the games. And that never took shape.
Yeah, that was one of their code names for a game that didn't go. And then the other one was Phoenix. Invested a lot of time in that game. And it never made it to actually being published. And both of those games were in development through Halo and into Halo 2. And it wasn't until late in Halo 2 that they shut down production on those two games and had to basically pull everybody in on Halo 2 to get it done.
Yeah, they were scrambling.
Did you know that Halo 2 was delayed?
No, I didn't.
I didn't either.
And the funny thing is, I actually remember, because I was in junior high at the time, I remembered when Halo 2 was announced.
I do too. I remember watching the Bungie trailer because they had, I think they were actually broadcasting it on Spike TV, the reveal, and seeing the cinematic trailer, well, I guess the gameplay trailer for Halo 2 just absolutely blew my mind. Seeing the, the BR for the first time and the SMGs and, the changes to the turrets and just the graphical upgrade that, Halo 2 got over CE. As soon as I got done watching it, I was pumped. I honestly don't remember them ever stating that it had been delayed or, changing a release date or anything like that. Because I don't think when they actually announced Halo 2, did they actually announced a release date. You know, it was like coming soon type deal.
Yeah, I don't remember. It was a long time ago. But yeah, I didn't know it was delayed. And I mean, at least they fought for it to be delayed because we got a pretty good game out of it. Granted, if you read through the article, you'll see that a lot of the success was attributed to the multiplayer actually being successful. And there was a part near the end of this first part of the history where Joe at the time was the one that was kind of leading the story for Halo 2. And because they had so much that they were trying to fit in, they had a complete third act, which ended up being the first half of Halo 3, being cut from the game. And Marty's going back and forth with Joe saying, people are not going to like this. And they were trying to cut it in such a way where it would be similar to The Empire Strikes Back for Star Wars Episode 5, where you could kind of leave it there and it's a clean cut. But as everyone infamously knows, people were pretty pissed at the ending of Halo 2.
Yeah, it still ranks in the top 10 of the worst endings for a video game. Still. And you know, the game's 10 years old.
And at the time, we didn't know if we were going to get a Halo 3. I mean, people were kind of assuming that we would based on the ending, but people were not happy.
I mean, you know, in Halo CE, it was kind of a similar ending in that he says, well, this is just the beginning, and you leave him, out in the middle of nowhere in a longsword with no way home. But just the way they did Halo 2, you're driving through that campaign, you're getting pumped, you can almost taste the end of the campaign, and then they say, you're done.
Yep.
I mean, the first time I played through that, I was pissed. I'd have been in my 30s, and I got done playing that game, and I was pissed. What the heck? And I mean, there's got to be a legendary ending. So I immediately turned around and started going through it on legendary. And after four days of trying to make it through Cairo Station, I skipped it and went on to the next level.
Talk about the hardest learning curve of any campaign initial game level. Halo 2 ranks up there, I think.
I mean, the only really thing that I can complain about on the campaign is the difficulty scaling was just weird. You playing normal co-op felt like you were playing on legendary, but with two people. And with the Iron Skull on, it was very satisfying to complete the campaign, especially on that legendary difficulty. Because, I mean, when you got done with it, man, you were like, I'm glad I don't have to do that again. And then the Master Chief Collection shows up. But anyway, if it wasn't for Halo 2's multiplayer, the whole Halo universe would be a lot different. One thing I have to admit, and one thing I like, is the fact that they included some of the original videos from the marketing. And one of those videos is a commercial for the NVIDIA GeForce 2.
Oh, yeah. And now we're up to 1080s and whatnot.
I'm like, the 2? And of course, they've got a cutout shot of the graphics card as the Marines holding it.
In standard definition.
Yeah, and it's absolutely hilarious. And I'm like, I'm looking at this card. I think my laptop's got a better card than that in it. And I'm not talking about my new one.
I think my family's PC from 10 years ago has probably had a better graphics card in it than that.
But, the fact that they were marketing it to PC, and that was, if I remember right, that was in the CE engine, right? The original Halo engine. It wasn't Halo 2, was it?
Yeah, it was the original. 2? Nope, it's the original.
So, you know, they pretty quickly expanded. It seems like they pretty quickly expanded into that PC marketplace. One thing I'd like to know is where the Mac thing went, because they kind of really didn't finish that out, at least where I saw it. I mean, you know, the last thing you hear is you have Pete telling Steve Jobs that he's going to be able to get him the IP so it can be released on Mac. And then I don't remember hearing anything else about it.
That's all I saw. It was just that one conversation of make sure this comes to Mac, because we showed it off as being a Mac game. And I think they did there was someone that had left Bungie recently that was working on a company that did Mac ports. So they were going to work directly with them to actually port the game over to Mac, and they did it. I don't know how much support there is for Mac on Halo now, but because I think the patches have only come out for PC. And I don't even think you can actually install Halo on the current Mac, where you can still install Halo on PC on a Windows 10 PC native. There's that.
Yeah, you probably would have to be running an older Mac to be able to play it on Mac.
And I don't even know if OS X does emulation for older systems, kind of like Windows does, even though the Windows older emulation doesn't really work that well anyways. I don't think you get much benefit there anyways. Most people probably know about the Macworld stuff already, know about Monkey Nuts and Blam as the code names for the game.
I liked his description of why they changed the name.
Yeah. Don't think people would be very happy if we just went around talking about Monkey Nuts and telling friends and family that we were working on a title called Monkey Nuts.
Yeah, you know, that's the part that got me. I don't think I want to be telling my mom I'm working on Monkey Nuts.
Yeah, that'd be a very interesting conversation. I'm just going through here and seeing if there's some stuff that sticks out to me. One of the things, kind of as I'm remembering through the article, is Halo started off as the third-person shooter, but mostly as a focus on 4v4 gameplay, multiplayer. And then the shift changed to campaign, having a story behind the Master Chief, who he is, and they had the discussion in there about how they came up with the rank of Master Chief and the name and all that stuff. And then multiplayer being one of those, like, okay, shifting focus back to that and getting that developed and having a discussion on whether to keep a sniper rifle or a shotgun in the final build of the game. And then something else that I didn't even really connect the dots until reading this article, but the original Halo game came out within 2 weeks of 9/11. And everyone on September 11th, 2001, was in the office, and Marty O'Donnell was actually working. They had 3 days to apply music and sound effects to 33 cutscenes. So they had 3 days to do it. And September 10th, they got 11 done, so they were on schedule there. And then September 11th is when it happened, and everyone was in the studio. And the theme that is throughout this historical perspective is everyone just worked as hard as they could to get this product launched, both for Halo 1 and Halo 2. To the fact that they shouldn't have had to in the first place, but they were so under pressure that even the whole 9/11 situation didn't even deter employees from going in, because, like, we have to get this done. And Marty said he had to go into the office and drag people out of work and get them to go home. So that was an interesting story, and I never really connected the dots that Halo came out almost right after 9/11. And then the other part to that, too, is the Arbiter wasn't actually planned to be called the Arbiter in the game. There was, another name. The original name was supposed to be Dervish. And Dervish is a Islamic reference. I'm trying to find it. The name refers to a special set-apart role in the religion of Islam, a kind of holy warrior. And that was kind of the idea that they were going behind with the Arbiter. So when the 9/11 thing happened, they had to change it. They had to redo dialogue. 90% of the game, for 97% of the game, the Arbiter was called Dervish, and they had to go back and change a lot of that.
And they did say, if you listen closely, there are still a couple of references to it in the game that they missed in production. But they also made comment that it's so garbled that it's hard to hear. So
that was something that stuck out to me. Just trying to scroll through here and find some other things, too.
You know,
Cortana,
honestly,
also another name. Sorry, go ahead.
Going back to what Marty was saying, when I was reading through it the first time, I saw the date and it didn't even click on me. It didn't click what day he was talking about. And I don't know why. I guess I just skipped over where he said, it's September 10th. And, it didn't click until I was like two or three paragraphs down the way a little bit. And it's like, oh my Lord, to still be doing production after something like that.
And especially going right up to launch. Cortana's name was another one that kind of stuck out to me. So Marathon's AI was named Durandal, which was a famous literary French sword. And it was between two other names that they were going to do another kind of sword reference off of. So Durandal was already in Marathon. And Jamie says the swords came in three packs, so to speak. So there's Durandal, there's Cortana, and Joyeuse, I think. And he said, yeah. Joyeuse sounds lame, so he's going to use Cortana.
Yeah, it's. I'm glad they went with Cortana.
Yep, and now it's used everywhere. And a lot of the Microsoft products.
Yeah, I like how they plugged it. It's now in your phone or something like that. Cortana is taking over the world!
Pretty much. Pins was asking us, I guess, to talk about this. Jason Jones going off on his own partway through. So there's a part in the history here where Jason Jones goes off and kind of does his own thing with the other part of Bungie while Halo 2 is being worked on. And Jamie in here, and I hope I kind of say this right. I don't remember exactly off the top of my head. Where Jason Jones would kind of focus on something and get tunnel visioned. When he was tunnel visioned, he couldn't really make much progress as an effective leader. And one of the issues that they faced early on in Halo 2's development was not really having that leadership there for the project. And it caused a lot of issues with the team being able to actually do what they needed to do and going back and forth. And eventually it just came down to, I guess, Joe Staten really picking up the pieces and kind of leading the team as far as the story for Halo 2.
Yeah, it was from reading this article, it was the same with Halo. He gets focused on one thing and he gets to the point where he can't multitask. And it's with all the difficulties that they had in the development of Halo 2 or Halo and Halo 2, I'm surprised the games launched.
And launched in such a way that it did, even in Halo 1. I didn't realize how late up until the point of launch that the multiplayer was on the chopping block and they had to redo that. And then for Halo 2 that they had to basically scrap large parts of the campaign and redo that over again too.
It's an interesting look into the game development world that kind of makes you appreciate when you get a game that comes out and it's playable, with very few, no game breaking glitches, but very few glitches. My hat's off to these developers to get these games out and get them out on time and playable. The deal with Halo 2 is just, the reason it got delayed is because it was a huge game. Their idea of the campaign on this game was enormous. And it should have been from the beginning looked at to be, a two game set just for the amount of content there was. But the way the story was written, it was written in a way that there's no real clean cut. Something else with Halo 2, I was surprised to see that several people were against the Arbiter. They didn't think that's the game people wanted. You know, they wanted to play Master Chief.
Well, and to add to that point as well, one of the things about the Halo CE side was they didn't expect people to really get attached to the NPCs of Halo, and that they were going to basically make them dispensable. Mm-hmm. But people latched onto the NPCs of Halo.
Well, I tell you what, if they didn't want somebody us to latch on to Sergeant Johnson, they should have picked somebody else to voice him. And I wish they still did it today, and I hope it comes back. But I always loved that you had different dialogue for different difficulties in the campaign. Because it was always great to hear those different lines. You know, especially, you know, like in Halo 2, you get the tank, you're Billy Badass, and you're going to go across the bridge. And, you know, on easy, you know, Sergeant Johnson's a nice, clean cut, level-headed guy. You get the legendary, and yeah, you've definitely got a sailor. You know, it's, you know, I love, yeah, and that's one thing I always, that I enjoyed about the, you know, Halo CE and Halo 2 was the change up of dialogue with the cutscenes. Cutscenes the same, but it gets a whole new tone just with the change of dialogue. You know, I really wish that's something they would bring back. Granted, I understand that that's additional development time they have to spend on it, additional time they have to spend with the voice actors, but that was the one thing about the Halo games that I always thought was very special.
One among many things, really.
Well, I mean, as far as on the campaign side, you know, that's part of what made the campaign really replayable. Because depending on which difficulty you picked, you would have not really a different story, but it would be told to you in a different way. And I really enjoyed that.
I personally really like, in addition to the difficulty dialogue, just in Halo 2 specifically, the fact that you did get to see the Arbiter side. And through reading this, it looked like Joe Staten was the one that really kind of pitched that idea. And to me, that's one of the appealing things about Halo 2 campaign is you get both sides of the story, and it really enhanced the universe of Halo. And I think that's kind of what really kicked off a lot of the external fiction to the games. Because if you just followed Master Chief, I don't think it would have been, I don't think you'd have people as invested in the lore of the universe if they hadn't done that for Halo 2.
Yeah, as far as that, I mean, that was a really good move on their part. But, you know, on the downside of that, that's what also made the story so huge, because they weren't just telling one, they were telling two stories. So, yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. That was when the first time I'm like, what the heck's going on here? I'm going to play as the Covenant. You know, with that first cutscene, you're like, you know, and it's the thought process. Where in another game do you play a character that has lost the holy of holy artifacts for your religion? I mean, you have basically committed sacrilege on the highest level, and you have to earn back your right just to be part of the, you know, part of your religion again. You know, it's just amazing. And it really surprised me that so many people were against it. I'm glad they stood their ground and kept it in there.
Yeah. It looked like there was a lot of, not necessarily arguing, I guess, but maybe that's the right word, of what to do with the games at certain critical points of the development. I think this has been used for Halo before, and it's been used in this article too, but Halo was the perfect storm.
And it was.
They called it a death march in the article near the end of the Halo 2 development because of how many hours they were putting into getting Halo 2 off the ground and shippable. The amount of time that they put into the development of this was just insane. They came out with a good product because of it, but at what cost? And there was a part in here, I think it was Marcus Leto, that said, we had the vision, and if we had the right leadership to execute that vision, we know what product we would have come up with and that we wanted to make. And that just kind of, it's like, then you guys know if you had better leadership and better organization, you could have come out with XYZ, but you didn't. And that's hard to know. It's like, we could have done this, but we just didn't have it together. That's hard to see.
Yeah, if they would have been able to get their stuff together from the very beginning on Halo 2, they could have told the story that they wanted to, but they just were so unfocused because they didn't have good leadership. It wasn't that the people leading them were bad people. They were as lost as the people under them as to what to do. One of the guys they had leading, you know, he'd never led anything, you know, led a team before, and then you put him on this massive project. And then you have, you know, the lead of the company decide, well, I'm going to go work on this other project for a while. Oh, get this one back up and going. It's like, this is your baby. I mean, there's dates set for this one. The other one, you know, it doesn't have a release date. That this one does. And to not, it just, oh. Like I said, I commend the people that worked their butts off to get that game out.
They really did. I mean, kudos to everyone that made the game. And it's funny, Max Obermann said that you would have expected with how kind of little chat there was from the multiplayer team, that they would have had everything under control and that they would have had a decent sized team. And he says, no, we were a pretty small team and we were struggling too. But it sounds like they had their clear vision of what they wanted to do. Max was basically giving the reins of, you want to do this online multiplayer thing? Well, you go and do it then. And he did. And I think that's why multiplayer was kind of the crux of Halo 2 and kind of laid some of the foundations of what Xbox Live is now today. It's amazing to think of how many influences Halo has made for the Xbox platform and for gaming in general. And one of the things that they mention in here, which I think people have probably heard this before from other write-ups or histories of Halo, is Halo really defined shooters being able to be played on console. Jamie mentions GoldenEye in here being able to play that, but it was hard to play, and it didn't match the caliber of what you could do on PC. He was the one that was in charge of coming up with the control scheme for doing the first-person shooter on a controller, and he nailed it. And that has set precedence for every shooter on a console since.
Yes. The first time I played Halo, I had never played a game. I'd never played a first-person shooter, period. I didn't like them, you know, they just weren't my kind of thing. You know, I'd always been into, you know, like the racing games, the platform type games. And then my friend brings this Xbox over and we're playing it, and I can't, you know, I'm looking up at the sky, I'm looking down at the ground, I'm walking around in circles, trying to put the reticle on their body, and I'm, you know, I just kind of making figure eights. But the funny thing is how intuitive it became and how quickly it was adopted by people. I mean, for me, the WASA, yeah, I can't do it. I've tried. I literally have tried. I played through about half the Halo 2 campaign with keyboard and mouse, and I never really got the hang of it. I honestly could not get, I couldn't go past easy. on PC. I just, my brain just didn't work like that. But the joysticks, it just makes sense. In, I don't know why. I mean, I even play inverted.
I think the pull for the controllers, honestly, is the triggers. You're pulling the trigger of a gun. It's the triggers.
Well, you know, that never really, I never really had a problem with that because, you know, you're just pushing a button. But, you know, the movement is where it's always made the difference for me. It always seems that, you know, if I have a controller, it's more intuitive to move about the map. It's, you know, okay, I need to look here. I need to push this stick this way. You know, not, okay, do I need to push a button or do I need to move the mouse? And it just, it's a similar type motion, or, you know, the same things happen, but it just doesn't work in my brain. And, you know, there's lots of people that it's just the opposite. People hate, there's PC players out there that can't do controllers. They're too foreign to them. And then you get the PlayStation controller, and that screws you all up.
Yeah, because they're not even really triggers. They're more like just buttons.
That and the thumbsticks are in the wrong place.
Yeah, two of them right next to each other. Clashing of thumbs. Another thing I have up here on the article that I kind of pulled out too is whenever they first moved into the Microsoft Studios, when they first got bought out, they worked by Encarta. They're in the same office as the Microsoft Encarta. So that was kind of funny to learn. And I didn't know this was such a big issue, but apparently Microsoft had an issue with the name Halo. They didn't like it at all. And they fought tooth and nail just to even slap a subtitle on it, which Bungie thought was stupid, but they ended up going with it anyways. And that was the only way they could really keep the Halo title on the game. And that was something that Bungie had discussed of what they wanted the title on before Microsoft bought them out.
Yeah, I knew about the name change. I knew Microsoft pressured them to change the name, and they settled on the subtitle so that they could keep Halo. And, you know, the funny thing is, you know, Microsoft hated Halo as a name. And so Microsoft came up with the subtitle, Combat Evolved, and the people at Bungie hated that. So I guess we got to compromise
on both sides. Yeah.
You know, the funny thing is for Halo 2, it just became Halo 2. But also by then, the brand had recognition. I could kind of see it from Microsoft's perspective. If you walked in to, you know, local PC store, or you walked into Walmart or Best Buy or whatever, and you saw this game and it's called Halo, would you pick it up? Well, what is it? It Halo. What is it? Just picture of a ring and a guy in a mech, or, you know, in a suit, you know, in an armored suit.
It wouldn't be something that sticks out to you right away, that's for sure.
No, it wouldn't. So it's probably a good move to, you know, to add the Combat Evolved thing on there, you know, for the simple fact that, you know, it revolutionized a shooter.
There's a lot more stuff in here, but I think we've covered a lot of stuff that people wouldn't have probably heard from before.
Well, I highly recommend that anybody that has, you know, 8 or 10 hours to kill, read this article. Because, I mean, it is a long read. I think at the very beginning of the article, they estimate 174 minutes to read the whole thing. I'm like, whoever came up with that estimate is a quick reader. Because I got 4 hours just in part one.
It took me at least 3 hours for part one. I bet whoever was reading it or timing it kind of skimmed through some of the stuff, because I like seeing what everyone is saying, not just getting the general feel of what's being said.
But, you know, I also stopped and watched the videos, you know, because it's kind of fun to watch the videos.
Oh, see, I didn't do that. Because I've seen the videos before.
Yeah, I've seen, well, I didn't see the NVIDIA video before, but, you know, I've seen all the videos before, but they're fun to watch. I mean, especially watching that, you know, the Halo 2 E3 trailer and remembering the feeling I had when I saw that trailer for the first time. Yeah, I had a computer at the time, but I was on dial-up. Well, I mean, you know, up until then, you know, Xbox Live had just launched. And I had no games that required Xbox Live. Because the only game I played was Halo, and I think I had one of the Forza. I think I had Forza that I played. So, you know, I didn't have a game that required Xbox Live. But by the time Halo 2 launched, I had my 1 meg internet connection.
Yay!
1 meg! Woo!
That was more than DSL.
It was. It was a cable connection. Of course, couldn't get DSL where it was. But, yeah. I mean, you know, up until then, the only thing I really used the internet for was just keep up with my bank. You know, just keep my checkbook in balance. I really didn't browse, you know, I didn't really browse the internet because, you know, you click on something and then you go sit and watch TV for 5 minutes and you come back to it.
We had AOL growing up.
Yeah, I tried AOL. And then I actually, you know, that was with my first computer, which was a freebie that I got. I think it was my first computer was a 486.
Oh, wow.
So you can imagine how the internet worked on that one. It was running Windows 95.
Okay.
But yeah, it didn't take too long before I figured out I needed a better computer. So I went up to Best Buy and bought, this is funny. I bought this little HP computer. You know, it's...
What, it have like a 40 meg hard drive and 64K of RAM?
No, it didn't have 512. No, it had 128 in memory. It only had one stick. It was running Windows ME.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. It had
that operating one system.
Expansion slot. This was a micro ATX board before micro ATX showed up. Just to let you know how big this thing was.
Jeez.
You know, it came with a modem. It actually had a modem in it.
Okay.
That was your second expansion slot. Didn't even have a network card on it. And this thing cost $800.
Oh, gosh. And now that you can get Raspberry Pis that are more powerful than that for 40 bucks.
Right. And it was the Tower keyboard and mouse, no monitor. Monitor was another $200.
Oh, gosh.
I got it on special. They had a special deal going. If you signed up a 2-year contract with MSN, you got half off. So okay. I had MSN dial-up for 2 years. Well, I actually had it longer than that, but because, you know, in the early days, high-speed internet wasn't that reliable. So I kept my, you know, I kept my dial-up for backup. I think it was, you know, I think I kept it for another year and a half, 2 years before I finally turned off dial-up because it got to the point where I just wasn't using it anymore.
I find it surprising that there are still dial-up numbers out there. Well, I guess it's not that surprising because of some of the rural parts of the U.S., but yeah, there's still dial-up out there.
There's towns not too far from me that still do not have high-speed internet. I mean, within 45 minutes of driving, you know, wow. They still, if you want internet, you have to get the modem out. You definitely don't go browse on YouTube. I mean, you know, in most cases, a lot of
websites aren't even designed for slow speeds like that anymore because you have, I mean, heck, you have a background image that's at least 3 megs. You're screwed.
I mean, you know, pretty much most people down there, if they want internet, they use a cell phone or they use, you know, some type of 4G network.
Got it. Well, that must really suck for the places that don't have network coverage for cell phones. Something else on the article that I just found while I was scrolling through it. There was another game that they were working on that was kind of like a third-person fantasy game called gypsum that they were wanting to work on that they ended up not doing, but it was going to be similar to the Arkham series or Shadow of Mordor or The Witcher 3. And they were working on a game like that back in 2003, and now that's kind of one of the more popular genres of games. They were working on it back then, but it never saw the light of day.
Which, I mean, you know, that's pretty much a story that you could see from any game developer. There's, you know, there's games that they start development on that they just, they never finish. Because if something else comes along that's a lot more promising. So it's, yeah, it's not surprising.
And then one of the other things here I just found as well is the original Halo multiplayer experience was supposed to be something akin to what Halo 5 Warzone's experience is currently. So to have large maps and have players and AI. So after they went from a third-person shooter to a first-person shooter, that was their first concept of multiplayer, was doing something like Warzone.
Everything old is new again.
Again, Halo was meant just to be a multiplayer game at the start.
Yeah, that kind of blew my mind. You know, without the campaign, I don't know if I would have ever got into Halo. I mean, to the depth that I'm in. I'm not saying anything else.
I think we've pretty much exhausted the first part. There's probably other little tidbits that we probably didn't quite cover. I think we got most of the stuff that people probably would not have heard of in this first part, though. And everyone's heard about it started as an Apple title and it started as a third-person shooter. Heard about the demo from Macworld and all that stuff. So I think we covered most of the stuff as far as what people may not have heard already.
Yeah, you know, the story about how the monks came about and that stuff. Yeah, people have heard all that. But I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm glad they still put it in there.
Yeah. I mean, this is a pretty complete picture of development behind Halo. And there's actually quite a bit of new stuff in here that I don't think has seen the light of day before.
Yeah, especially how disorganized Bungie was making these games.
I guess we'll see how better Halo 3 was.
Well, hopefully it was a lot smoother.
Yeah, no kidding. So part 2 is Halo 3 ODST, and then part 3 is going to be the transfer of power to 343. So we'll cover part 2. I don't know if we'll do 2 shows next week or not. Probably not. But we'll cover part 2, not in the next episode, but the episode after that. Because next episode we're going to have the folks on from Project Contingency on. But we'll cover the next 2 parts in 2 subsequent episodes coming up. Again, you can head on over to vice.com and you can just search for the Untold Story of Halo, or just search for Halo and it'll be one of the articles that come up. Take a read if you're interested. If not, then we'll be discussing the next 2 parts in some upcoming episodes. So thanks everyone for sticking it out with us. I know it's kind of a longer show tonight because of the article that we were going through. It's good stuff, though. Lots of interesting stuff for Halo fans in particular. Make sure you check us out on all of our social media. We're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitch. If we have it, you can find us at podtaco.com/whatever it is. No pins. We do not have MySpace. We will never have MySpace. You can find us over on all of our social media platforms. You can also find us over on thepodcast.com. We are part of a group of gaming-specific podcasts, including Critzcast, Guardian Radio, Podcast 76, The Learning Cliff, Work in Progress, and How to Murder Time. Find out more about those podcasts, simply head on over to thepodcast.com. A quick reminder on the loot crate, you have until August 15th to buy the first crate of the second year of Halo loot crates. That also comes with the first Cortana figure. That will be the first figure in the Series 2 of the Halo icons. Also, make sure you stay tuned to our social media and podcasts, and we'll be announcing a giveaway of the full icon set from the first series. that you may be interested in. And also go check out our videos that we posted of the Terminus firefight that will be coming to Halo Wars 2 in the next couple of months. We are going to be doing a code giveaways for some rec pack codes that we picked up at RTX. We have 40 of them to give away. So if you head on over and watch the videos, simply leave a comment and you will automatically be entered to receive one of those codes. Thanks everyone for tuning in tonight. Project Contingency folks will be on next week with a special announcement, and you will want to watch the Twitch stream if you are able to. We will probably try to post the video snippet on YouTube as well afterwards. And also, I will be at San Diego Comic-Con if anyone else is going to be attending. So if you are, let me know on Twitter or Facebook or however, and let's meet up. Any last things, GT?
Yeah. Be sure to join me every Friday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time for Fraggin' Fridays. It's our Lobby's Choice night, and I am looking for people that want to finish the Halo 5 campaign. I am currently working on the next version, our next episode of Achieving Halo, but unfortunately, it's been like 100 degrees outside, so my office is like 90 degrees. And sitting in front of three monitors when it's 90 degrees is not comfortable. So I'm hoping to get the video editing done with it this weekend. It's supposed to be a little cooler, and we'll get it posted up.
Sounds good. Again, hit GT up. He's on Twitter, at Godzilla Todd. And then you can find him on Xbox for the game nights and for the campaign runs. All right. Keep on fragging them trucks.